episode 339.
And what's left over is really not detrimental to the operation of the business, nor is there a huge data situation. You know, so I've got that covered in simplest forms because the systems that I use are not cloud ready. You know, so I have to be able to put these protections in place.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hey, welcome friends and aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here with the Aftermarket's premier talk radio podcast. Welcome to part one of a new episodic series called Geek 2.0. More on how this series came about in a moment. My guest and I are covering a lot of ground as it relates to personal development and all aspects of running a great business. So many insights and learning moments inside each interview. And the topics in the Town Hall Academy just seem to hit home runs each week. Your support and commitment to be a lifelong learner drives the burn to continue bringing you some of the best aftermarket talk radio. Hey, also a driving force that makes all these interviews possible is Federal Mogul Motor Parts. When you need to search for parts or get the latest technical updates, or even to sign up for some Garage Rewards Loyalty Program swag for both techs and shops, go to fmmotorparts.com. Thanks, Federal Mogul. I've been interviewing technicians of late, and I want you to be sure you consume every episode. Who can argue with the value that our industry receives from our technicians? No matter your role in our beloved aftermarket, owner, tech, service advisor, distributor, manufacturer, business coach, or association executive, you benefit to best understand what our technicians are talking about, what motivates them, how they look at training, pay, and benefits. Stay in the know and enjoy all the technician interviews. Hey, the network of connected listeners builds every week, and I'm honored to have new Facebook friends Don Sullivan, George Cattenby, Walter Kaiser, Michael O'Brien, and Becky Almanza McGinnis. And my latest LinkedIn connections, Ashley Lucas, Stephen Shipman, and Greg Montero. Hey, see the show notes page for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E339. The key talking points, bios, and links to my guests' previous episodes are all there. Okay, here's how Geek 2.0 got started. In the Town Hall Academy on SMS Systems, it was Academy Episode 65, we got on a tech roll. We were talking geek, and we decided to create an episodic series. Here are the facts. Talking geek can be a full-time job in our industry. With tech changing at light speed, we thought it a good idea to talk about it, and maybe even debate it. Most importantly, our goal will be to inform you of important areas of your business you need to pay attention to when it comes to tech of all kinds. In this episode, we talk cloud-based systems, how to protect yourself from ransomware, a little ATIS, and why your involvement in your state's laws regarding who controls the vehicle data in autonomous cars is critical. Your independent voice must be at the table. I cannot thank my panel enough for their passion on everything Geek 2.0. Greg Buckley, CEO, Buckley's Personalized Auto Care, Wilmington, Delaware. Chris Clodier, Golden Rule Auto Care, Dallas, Texas, and CEO of Autotext.me. Bill Nalu, President of Interstate Auto Care, Madison Heights, Michigan. Kareem Morsel, Winkler Automotive, Gaithersburg, Maryland. Ollie Branch, Network Specialist. And Tracy Martin, author and trainer. Now, listen to part one while you text your friend and share this episode with them, but please don't do it while you're driving. Saddle up for this first installment of Geek 2.0. Hey, a warm welcome to our first Geek 2.0 part one. Oh my God, how exciting this is. Greg Buckley, CEO, Buckley's Personalized Auto Care, Wilmington, Delaware.
How are you guys?
Hey, Greg. Chris Clodier, Golden Rule Auto Care, Dallas, Texas, and the CEO of Autotext.me.
Hello, Carm.
Hey, Chris. Bill Nalu, President, Interstate Auto Care, Madison Heights, Michigan. Hi, Carm. Kareem Morsel from Winkler's Automotive, Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Hello, Carm.
Ollie Branch, Network Specialist.
Hello, all.
And Tracy Martin, author and trainer.
Hi, everybody.
So let me take somebody back just a little bit ago. It was episode, the Academy episode 65. We got together, a few of us, and it was Greg, it was Bill, it was Kareem, it was Chris. And we were talking about the value of your SMS data, who controls it. And by the end of that, it got loosened, it got great. It was really a classic. It's going to be a classic episode. And we started to talk about, well, we need to get together again and really take this to another level. And I don't know who it was. I think it was you, Bill. You said we should call this Geek 2.0. So instead of just letting the idea float in the air, I said, let's do this. And you all kind of agreed and came back. And we added Ollie. We added Tracy. And we're going to talk about the stuff that's really critical and really important for automotive aftermarket professionals to kind of keep touch with tech. Because tech is moving at the speed of life. And Kareem, you've got some network background. Ollie's a network specialist. Chris, you're deep in the deep end of the pool when it comes to tech. Tracy, you've written tons of great articles on it. And Greg, you stay so on the cutting edge in the application side of it. And Bill, you know, here you're a practical use of technology. Every time you look at something, you say, you know, how does this relate to security and value in the tech world? So, Chris, I'm going to, go to you first and open the inaugural Geek 2.0 Part 1 for us.
Well, I appreciate that, Carm. And once again, thanks, everybody, for joining. Yes, thank you. Thank you for the applause. Excellent. So my first topic that I'd like to bring up is cloud-based systems and the positives and negatives of cloud-based systems. I know we're hearing this more and more and more as technology evolves. And we're hearing about cloud-based shop management systems. We're talking about cloud-based technologies that allow us to do digital inspections. We have cloud-based websites now. Whether or not you know whether or not your website is actually running in the cloud or whether it's running on a server, and what are the positives and negatives of a cloud-based system? First, I just want to define that a cloud-based system is not a application that's running on a server that's remote from your office. That is not a cloud-based system. Cloud-based systems require redundancy, big pipes coming into massive frameworks, running in a framework like or a operation or network like Amazon, AWS, Google Cloud. You also have Azure from Microsoft. So the positives and negatives of having an application run in a cloud. And the reason why I bring this up is me and Ollie, my network specialist, were actually talking about ransomware, and he asked me a very valid question. And he said, Chris, I'm updating all of your applications and I'm updating all of your spy virusware. How are we protected when it comes to ransomware? And I said, you know what, Ollie? Don't worry about it, because our cloud, our SMS is cloud-based, our digital inspection is cloud-based. We use Google Docs. It's cloud-based. Everything in my shop is basically sitting remote somewhere else out in the cloud, being backed up on a regular basis. And so if ransomware were get infested in my environment or injected into my environment, I don't have to pay to unlock my system, right? And this is one of the big positives of cloud-based systems. Once ransomware is on your operating system, you're either paying that money to these people who are hijacking your data, or you're reinstalling, right? Ollie, there's not a whole lot that you get other than those two options when it comes to ransomware.
You're absolutely right.
So that's one of the big positives of cloud-based systems. So cloud-based systems, positives, negatives, go. I gave you a perfect example, ransomware, a good place to start with a positive of cloud-based systems.
So as a non-geek, this sounds to me like a pirate ship coming to hijack a freighter. And what are we arming ourselves with? Do we have snipers that can take out these? Because what you're talking about right now, this is news to me. I didn't think that, you know, like for me, the biggest disruption for me is, you know, having to reload a computer. This is about 2 or 3 hours of time. But what you're describing right now that's making me think is all of the, like in our case, parts cataloging, we've got 5, 6, 7 vendors that are tied in to our SMS. All that has to be reloaded. Will these companies be willing to load their stuff into the cloud so that the SMS and all of the supplementary software, the add-on software, the third-party software, can all load all at the same time. This is something that didn't even occur to me before this episode that you're bringing up at this point. That's a great question for me in my head.
To expand on Chris's point, you know, for me, I think about it every day. I have a server here. It's legacy. It's got my SMS just like you have, Bill. I do have the option to go and say, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm setting it all up on Amazon. And there are benefits to it, obviously. Number one, you're not into the hardware business anymore. You don't have to worry about a location on your premise. You don't have to worry about, you know, uptime, et cetera. You don't have to worry about the ransomware issue that Chris just highlighted, which, by the way, is extremely real. You don't hear about it in the news as much because the only ones that make it to the news is when the big companies get hit with ransomware. But every day, there are hundreds and hundreds of small businesses that get cut at this game. And these ransomware people, you know, all they need is, you know, 10, 15, 20 companies a day. They don't care. It's automated. And all they're doing is asking, pay here, we'll release you. And it's paid somewhere, you know, overseas where there's no extradition. There is no agreement with these countries where you can, you know, provide protection to your companies. Our government is very weak towards that. So, you know, it happens every day. So coming back, I could set it up on Amazon. It's particularly great, especially if you have multiple locations, because now you're offloading this whole responsibility of having, you know, that hardware being maintained on your premise. And you benefit from the protection that Chris was mentioning.
Kareem, is your software your own legacy system, or are you using someone else's?
I should be a bit more clear when I say legacy. When I mean legacy, that means I inherited it when I bought the shop.
Okay, but the company that is on your server, are they equipped to move it for you to a cloud server?
It would be transparent to them. You were saying, hey, install this on this server and my server is there. When they're remoting into my servers, they could be remoting into a server that I have on Amazon Cloud.
Yeah.
So now there's a couple of nuances we have to watch out for because, you know, and Chris can elaborate more on this because he is doing it, but you've got to make sure that the architecture of the software will take advantage of being in the cloud, which is a bit different than an actual physical server in your location. But, you know, when you're, we call it spinning up a server. When you spin up a Windows-based server on the cloud, you've got pretty much 90% of the functionality that you get if you had it sitting next to you under your desk.
Yeah, you would have to look at licensing. One would be an issue, right? Because you're going to have so a cloud-based system, and part of the power of the cloud is the ability to grow and shrink based off of loads, right? So the whole idea is you can spin up, like you said, other instances of this software. So as the load, as you get more requests coming in and as more traffic. So imagine it as a highway, right, that expands and shrinks based off of the number of cars that come in, right, which is somewhat true because now we're talking about bandwidth, but I'm trying to apply the same thing of growing servers and shrinking servers when it comes to highways, right? But you have to have that ability. If in order for Kareem to be able to spin up multiple instances of his shop management system, he would have to get multiple licenses, and right, it's not going to be as easy as a truly cloud-based.
Yeah, that concerned me. I wouldn't want anybody who's listening to rush out and say, I'm going to do this. There's got to be steps to follow. Okay, I got that.
Sure.
No, number two, as part of what you just said, do we know anybody, a shop owner, who's been held ransom?
I actually know out of my 20 group, I know three shops. Now, there's several hundred in this 20 group because there's several, but three shops and a couple more multi-shop operations that were held. They had no option. Pay the bills, what they had to do.
Any idea the amount?
I don't know the amount. I couldn't tell you.
So we're paying these people? We actually negotiate with these pirates?
No, you don't negotiate. You pay.
You pay.
Yep. You pay.
I had an incident where this was maybe 3 or 4 years ago that I did have an attack, and it was a very subtle one. But again, they wanted to have me pay. And I just said, you know what? No. And I went, and it was a good time to go buy a new box, and I had everything backed up. I simply just said, you know what? Forget it. Everything was backed up to that day. And I went out, bought a new machine, got everything. Then I loaded up and boom, it was fine. Did I like doing that? No. Is it a scare? Was it a scare? Yes. So here's the thing that I'm thinking of. You know, all of us here on this panel today understand what depths that hackers and those types will go after. What I see as a problem is we have other shop owners who may not even want to do this. They might not want to prepare for it. It's not in their zone at the moment. They're trying to just survive for the next day. They haven't even wrote a work order on a computer yet. They still may be using pen and pencil. These are all complications that will just, you know, take years to get over. So what tips can we offer to the shop owner in just basic form and to get them to start the path down or the path up to protection? You know, that's a question I'm asking.
Well, when you're describing that, Greg, why is it not as simple as just reloading all the software? Wipe out the hard drive, start from the beginning.
Well, I think that was what I did. I said I wasn't going to pay anybody. I knew that I keep nothing on my machines that is that valuable. All of my documents and all of the important things are definitely cloud-based. I use Google Docs.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I back up religiously once, possibly twice a day before I leave the end of the night. You know, so I know that I'm somewhat secure, and what's left over is really not detrimental to the operation of the business, nor is there a huge data situation. You know, so I've got that covered in simplest forms because the systems that I use are not cloud ready. You know, so I have to be able to put these protections in place. But for the shop owner that doesn't even back up, how do we emphasize the fact that, listen, put the stick in the USB port, just program it, just go ahead and get this done. Should our vendors be, the software vendors be emphasizing that a little bit more? Should we as a profession start to tell our colleagues, listen, guys, man, it's like, you know, we can give all kinds of examples of what this type of protection is like, but, you know, we have to start to think, all right, and we go down to the lowest level, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, but you've got the Homer Simpson rule. Keep it simple. What do we need to do to tell people, look, stop the chances, lower the risk, and then if it does happen, you can survive. You know, the last thing that you want to hear is, you know what, I didn't back up for the whole month and they took all my data or they hijacked all my data. You've got 30 days, 31 days of financials that you're going to have to somehow be accountable for. And you all know that it's very hard to recreate. In fact, most wouldn't even do it. They would just take an assumption and go forward. You know, that's the issue that I see. The other thing that I struggle with here is I have QuickBooks, you know, for the accounting side, and I use back office and we integrate real well. Well, do you know that it took me forever to try to find, to have my accountant sign off on QuickBooks Online? Cloud-based, we enjoy it. We have everything set up. We know it's protected, just like you guys are just saying. Chris, like you're saying, hey, man, you know, I don't have to worry about my hardcore financials. It's going to be protected. But yet my accountant, and I haven't found one yet that actually says, you know what, I really enjoy working with QuickBooks Online. You know, they want me to use the...
My accountant actually told me I need to go use QuickBooks Online, which
fantastic.
Told me, he said I need to switch, and I'm like, why haven't you told me about this earlier?
Right.
Because I have everything. That's one of the things I have on my laptop.
Okay, guys, let me bring this down one step. What does the shop owner do if he's not cloud-based to protect himself?
I would say step number one, who here on this panel is not using Google Docs? Are we all using Google Docs? We all are. I think that's a good place to start, right? At least taking your processes and procedures and putting them out in Google Docs. It's free, and Google, just as long as you don't share it with the world, you have to watch your sharing. There was just an article about this not too long ago in the news about not sharing the link. Make sure you share with specific people, because if you share the link and you make it, then they can go index it. So you have to be careful about specifically sharing. But if you're sharing SOPs and a lot of the information that's just core to your business, then that's just an easy place to start. I would say Google Drive, Google Docs is a good place to start putting your documentation.
Okay, but is there anything to put on the software, any kind of anti-virus, ransomware virus protection?
We can start talking about networking now, because now it's about how you segmented your networks and your customer can't bring in ransomware or some virus onto your main network, or your guy on the phone or one of his personal device can't ever get on your main network that has right. access to all the things that are important.
So I think to follow up on that point, I want to answer something else too that Greg brought up. He says, how do we make the shop owner understand the importance of this, right? My take is simple. Start with which shop owner does not have a security camera system? I mean, you want to know who's coming on your property, what's going on your property, what is happening to the cars, what are the employees doing, da 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 da. It's the same thing with your data and network. You want to know what's going on. You want to be able to have triggers, reports sent to you, emails saying, hey, somebody's is pinging these different ports, which is equal to doors, right? Imagine you're careful about which bays are open and closed, which back doors are open and closed. Well, a port on your router is the same thing. It's a door inside your business. So I think that's one way to get to the shop owner, to make him understand that this is just another way into your business. And then to go further with Chris is pointing out to, the number one way that networks are vulnerable, there's two places. One is the router, which is where the traffic comes in and out from the internet into your internal network. The other way is your employees plugging in USB, gadgets in their, laptops, desktop, whatever it is. You know, there are ways that you can actually disable these ports and make it a network policy on any computer that you put on your network. It will inherit a policy that says, you know what, USB ports disabled. Because that is the number one way that viruses get into the network and, all these ransomware, utilities. So that's what you have to be careful about. And then I would say to like Craig said, back up multiple times a day. You can do it at lunchtime when activity is lower. You can do it in the middle of the afternoon. You can do it early in the evening. You can do, mid morning. You got four or five opportunities to back up and back it off of your network. You know, again, use the cloud. Google Doc is what Chris mentioned. You can back up to Amazon. You can back up to, any place on a network. And I think maybe what we could do is share some of that information on how to do these things, whether it's a service you buy in, like many people will have Norton. Norton has an offline, backup in the cloud solution. Is it money well spent? Well, I will say that if it happens to you and you got a ransom to pay, and on top of that, you don't want to pay the ransom, but you've got the time to pay and the hardware to buy to create your new setup again, that $50, $100 a year or a month, whatever it is, it's going to be money well spent.
I'm talking with Jonathan Ciccelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Now, you're visiting shops every day, so when you put product in the hands of the technicians and service advisors, what are they saying?
Going back to Federal Mogul's long-term presence in the industry, they already know the product, and some of them we don't have to say much about. It's the newer product, the latest innovations that we come out with that just blow people away.
So, Jonathan, you take that brand new OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
They look at it and are kind of speechless for a couple seconds, and they just can't deny that it's an awesome-looking product, and they can't deny that it's going to work fantastic on their vehicles.
Now, another phenomenal product line that is just one of the most iconic brands in the entire industry is Moog. Now, there's a lot going on with Moog.
The newest thing with Moog is going to be, I think, the most important thing to the shops is the newer design ball joint that we created. And that was off of technicians' responses to a boot design.
That's that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot.
Absolutely. And as soon as I pull that out of a box and show a technician or a shop owner, they just were like, this is amazing.
So, Jonathan, would you say that you're a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, all the premium products?
Absolutely.
And a champion for all the training?
I'm very big on training. I've always been in training since I've been in the professional field. So just to come back and support on the other end has just been an awesome experience.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Let me be a naysayer. We hear every once in a while that these big corporations get hijacked somehow. Are you guys confident that these off-site server, big cloud-based servers, are going to be secure?
That is the number one con with cloud. That is the number one con, because you don't know.
Mm-hmm. In May,
anybody can be hacked.
Tracy? Yeah, May of 2017, when that WannaCry ransomware was out, it affected Honda, Renault, and Nissan in countries all over the world, and they had to shut production lines down until they either paid or fixed it. No one knows what they did because, of course, they're not saying, but, I mean, it really had a significant impact on them. Doesn't really have anything to do with us, but it is automotive, and it shows you that even the big company, you know, like Nissan, that has a whole IT department, is still subject to getting stuck with this.
The number one defense against ransomware is backup. Just have to have backup. But that's going to be your number one defense against ransomware is backup.
Yeah, there's things in my head that are popping in, like, what is to stop a terrorist or terrorists from going into a hospital, shutting down their network, and now instead of money being on the line, now we got literally people's lives on the line.
Welcome to cyber warfare. Yeah. It's a true reality.
Yeah. I agree. We're having it right now with the U.S. is in it right now. I mean, we're all over the world in cyber warfare. So here's my thought, Carm, is it depends on the data you're storing. We talked about this last time. Don't store credit card data. Not at all. Don't touch it. Don't store it in your Google Docs. Do not store it in your safe. Don't stay away from that data. Because if I'm a hacker, what am I going to look for? I'm going to look for social security cards. I'm going to look for driver's license numbers. I'm going to look for credit cards. So what data are you storing on your system, you know, your cloud? And make sure that any of that data is not data that's going to get you in a lot of hot water. That would be my first defense, right? Don't store stuff that you don't need to be storing.
And I want to add... Go ahead, Craig.
I'm sorry. I wanted to add to Chris. By the way, we're talking about ransomware, but there's a more dangerous form, which is the guy who's in your network. You don't know anything about it. He's or she's taking the data. In this case, Chris was saying, don't store credit card numbers. If you have credit card numbers stored because you want to be nice to your customer and you're just taking it and you're going to process it offline, whatever, that data is going to be sold on the dark web. You won't know about it. You will not know about it. And this could be going on and on and on and on for a while until, you know, somebody finds out that you're the source. Yeah. So, you know, you've got to be very careful about what you store, to Chris's point, and just, you know, close down. If somebody really wants to get into your network and they'll spend enough money and time, the odds are they will get in. But there are safeguards that we can put towards, you know, making it more difficult, changing your passwords often, you know. There's a lot of things that we can do as shop owners to at least buy yourself some time. But to Ollie's point, just back it all up, because no matter what, you're going to lose some data. You're going to lose some data if you have to do that.
So, Kareem, I've got a question for you, you techies. Is there an audit device, whether it's software, hardware, some hybrid of this, that will even maybe Google or Amazon, before they start storing stuff in the cloud, maybe is there some industry consensus that they might do audits for people who are paying for storage? Maybe it's freeware through Amazon, through Google, where they would do an audit of your network infrastructure. Is there such a thing in play?
Yeah, you should
I'm not aware.
Every quarter, right? You have to do, should be doing it through
PCI.
I mean, we do it and we're always in compliance, but that just doesn't seem like a very high bar to cross. We've never found any malware or anything. That PCI compliance test doesn't seem to be very, very comprehensive, should I say.
It will test against the most common ports. But I will tell you, for example, I know a lot of shops use voice over IP and or SIP, which is also, you know, used to do voice calls over your network. You have to open so many ports when you do voice over IP that your vulnerability in that area is huge, huge. And that's one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of voice over IP for shops that are not familiar with what they're doing. But you know, to be honest with you, it's a great question because I'm not sure that there is such a service. I'm sure you could buy it. I'm sure we could do it. That's a good point of research. I've always done mine, you know, but it would be something of great value.
Ollie, do you have any comment on that?
Are you talking about audit, like someone looking into your network, making sure everything's up to date, patched right and whatnot?
Yep.
There's no large company out there that does it. You can pay companies. There's, you know, companies that'll come in and they'll come in and, they call them white hat hackers. They'll come in, they'll try to hack your network. You know, bigger companies do that. But for, you know, individual shop owners, just got to have an IT guy come in there and do it for you, or an IT company.
Like, you would think that Norton or McAfee would have built something for a small business owner and do exactly what Kareem's talking about, a stress test on the network, on the infrastructure.
They do. And they'll just come in and what they do, it's going to be all online, and they just basically test ports on your firewall. They look at the most common ports first, and then they look at some of the backdoor ports that hackers may use, and they'll tell you if it's open or not. But that's kind of a generic, you know, port scan test.
This leads me into a question. Going back to educating and knowledge, mm-hmm. is there a time or a date that we should replace our hardware? Every 2 years?
Hardware,
are
you talking computers? You talking firewalls?
Everything. I mean, is there like a date and time that says, you know what, guys, technology is going to eclipse. We know the speed of technology is going to eclipse, you know, the next day. But let's say that I have a three-year-old box, right? Or I'm using. Is there a reason to advance your technology, to update it, to make it more it's more protective against hackers? We're not talking software here, but these are things that some of the guys can do. Like, I know the guys in the classes I would hold, guys would walk in with 10-year-old laptops and nothing about it, about firewall, no nothing. And you should say, all right, well, mm-hmm. don't you think you get to year 2007? You're 2000. How about 2007? You know, just to get them
right
up to speed a little bit. So, you know, we got the software side. We all know about the perils of that. But again, we go back to, hey, man, they're just coming off. They're just getting out of writing with pen and pencil or pen and paper. Now our hardware's got to be up to date. Is there something we could suggest?
I think for me, I can tell you, if you're at the networking level, things don't change that much in the networking level. So, I mean, besides now going into different IP addressing schemes because we're running out of IP addresses, right? And making sure your routers and your switches are capable of dealing with these two. But this standard has been out there for at least a decade. So I'm one of these people, Greg. I have a 10-year-old. What I like to do is buy top of the line hardware at the time I'm buying it. And then I know it's going to last for what I need it for. But a lot of times your need to change hardware is really dictated by the software makers. And so, you know, you in the case of Windows, very simple, you know, they're going to drop support on certain version of Windows, then you don't have much of a choice. And a lot of times the software makers who are basing their software on the various Windows versions that are out there will follow suit and say, listen, we're not going to support you if you're running this on such and such. So, for me, we've entered the age long ago, which is software over hardware. So, you know, if you've got a decent hardware, really it's an upgrade in software that's going to enhance how the CPU is used, the RAM's used, whatever it is that's being used on the hardware. But unless your software is written to a chip in your hardware that is not upgradable, then I would see a need to change your hardware. But I don't find it that it's necessarily a big drive. Like, I don't have a hard, I never used to at least have a fast rule about when to change hardware. I don't know, maybe Chris or Ollie or Tracy.
Another benefit of the cloud. Look, I mean, your hardware is constantly getting upgraded, right? Because you don't know where you're running. You're not stuck to any particular box. And then, so I tend to dabble in my Amazon cloud, and they're constantly forcing updates and patches. So software, it's almost daily. they're patching everything from security vulnerabilities, et cetera. So another benefit of the cloud is you're not having to worry about that because you're not attached to a piece of software. I want to make an interesting point. Actually, we officially ran out of IPs in 2017. Right. So now we are IPv6. Most people don't know that. Your cell phone does not speak IPv4. Another geek fact there.
Are they compatible both ways, 4 and 6?
Actually, there's a translation layer that happens from your phone when it calls an IPv4 website. Yeah. Nobody knows. It's just totally geeky stuff. Yeah. So IPv, we ran out of that. Very limited. IPv6 is just like long, nasty strings of
data. I didn't even want to go there.
No. Something you need to know. Everybody
needs
to know.
It's a commodity.
It is a commodity, an IP address. You did not know that.
I knew there was a reason we invited you here.
Chris wins the crown. He gets the crown.
Yeah, no, he gets the golden propeller.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, after Greg pulled out the Google glasses, I had to throw in some.
Yeah, that was in episode 65. I know, the Town Hall Academy 65. Hey, guys, this went, we took almost 3/4 of Geek 2.0 talking about this, but let me tell you, this was the greatest first question. This was the greatest dialogue. Thank you all so much. Greg, you got anything?
Well, I think, what's most important for us, we're living and breathing it. And we're not only doing it from the business side, we also have to work about the autonomous side. We have these cars coming in. And I know that Tracy just wrote some really great articles on everything. So we're going to be involved with tech on all the way around. I mean, 24/7. I like to see us somehow get the balance out or get the information out about, you know, to the consumers. That's where I think we have an opportunity to really not only profit, but explain how technology works with our clients. When and if level 3 is here, level 4 and 5 are on their way. Those type of things are going to present a lot of challenges to us. We've got you got hacking that can occur. The consumer's going to want all kinds of gizmos and gadgets in their car to make it convenient. They're going to want to talk to, like Trace, I think you said, they want to talk to the refrigerator talks to the car. They want to do this. They want to do that. All this is going to come our way. Well, how are we going to work with a client that's going to be asking these questions soon? Are we going to be the ones that's going to have the knowledge since we're there with the vehicle? So I'd like to see us develop more of a consumer facing, scenario that we can present to them and educate them.
I think a good role for a trade association, independent repair shop owners would be to develop some kind of brochure or written material or something that would be suitable to hand it to a customer and say, here's some things you need to be aware of, because you're really not going to have the time to sit there for 15, 20 minutes explaining to them what they should and shouldn't do. But something that you could hand to them, I think would be a good start. And then if they're interested, then that need would probably be met through some kind of training or online information you could provide them.
Because part of our role is to inform and communicate. Tracy, I love the brochure idea, but wouldn't it be stronger if we just went to the customer and says, hey, I see you have this special Audi, Honda, pick it, and you guys know that there's a lot of level 3 stuff on it. You know how your car works? You know all the really cool things that's going on with it. Now, it forces you guys to learn how all that stuff works, but have you experienced this yet? Do you know, what happens with the wheel? We should be, I think to your point, Greg, we should be, as an independent aftermarket, bringing our customers in saying, hey, we know and we get this stuff. So if anything starts happening someday down the road out of warranty, remember where you got all this great stuff from.
Yeah, I think, personally, nationally, we're seeing the driving age increase. We're having seniors who are having a very difficult time getting acclimated to new technology. All your pillars are different now. You can't see. You have to rely on the camera in order to see out back. These are all huge, huge situations where the older drivers aren't able to get acclimated or even compensate for what the car is doing. There's a mismatch. The car is we could say smarter than the driver, that's for sure. But at some point, there's going to have to be this interaction, and the driver's going to have to be aware of how that car is going to react. And that's a bridge where I don't know how long that'll take, but I do believe, I'm a firm believer that that is an area that we can excel at. It just takes a different model possibly. But I believe that technology is going to be a great, I think the autonomous side is going to be great for the economy. It's just going to be huge technology that's going to have to be explained to the average motorist. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. I'd like to add something though, because I think, you know, I always say before you can teach someone something, you got to understand it yourself. And I think right now as shop owners, we have to be and get ready for what's coming down the pike. You know, I don't know if you've seen it. Intel had a very great info. I forget what they call these. Basically, a poster that shows how much data is being generated by the next generation car. We're talking terabytes per day. As a shop owner who's going to have to fix those cars, what subset of that data am I looking at and am I looking for so that I can diagnose what the issue is on the car? Number one. Number two, you know, we have got to be ready as shop owners to start the dialogue, because there's another big issue that's going on around, which is, you know, access to data, the right to data as a consumer. We need to make sure that this is enforced, because right now the battle that's going on with car manufacturers and dealerships right underneath that is that we as independent shop owners don't have the wherewithal to understand what it's like to work on these cars, because we can't even get our own networks up in snuff. And I think if we don't take that bull by the horn and stay on top of that, stay ahead of the curve, and then also demonstrate to these car manufacturers, to the legislators, that we are fully capable of handling the data for diagnostic purposes to further the benefits to the consumer to have a choice as to where to bring their car for fixing. I think we got to be very careful about this, because this is one of those cars that's being played right now, but I don't know when I'm, you know, again, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know that many of us in the independent, you know, market are really involved in those discussions and making sure that we're able to say, hey, we can do this.
Good point. And I'll tell you what, just yesterday, I requested permission to join the Autonomous Council here in Delaware. And there's 19 spots that were picked by the governor. They left the independent side out and they brought in everybody else but us. And I don't blame them for that. I blame us for not having a loud voice enough to say, hey, wait a minute, we need representation here. We think it's very fair. So that's the argument I put forward in the email to request permission. There is a here in Delaware, on the 21st of June, there is a meeting that they're holding. And they're not announcing it. It's, you know, but public is allowed to go there. So I am going to be there in full force, because I want to be part of this council. I think it's important to at least represent us as independent repair centers, to give them an idea of what it's like and what kind of network they need to build. Because if they don't include our voices and our locations and all that we can bring to the table, they're going to shortchange themselves, and they'll design something that doesn't include us, and that would be a real issue.
Yeah.
So I can recommend that if any of us here on the panel can go back to our groups and say, listen, find out where these councils are, find out who I need to talk to, get involved. Is it going to take some legwork and some time? Yes, Jesus, everybody knows if we want to go down this road. But I'm taking that stand. I'm going for it, and I want to be part of it. I think it's exciting, and I think we can do that.
Yeah, Greg, not to make you jealous, but you know, last year, you and Carm, we're in my neck of the woods in Detroit, and Donnie had put together this incredible connected cars thing. Guess where I'm going tonight? Connected Cars 2.0. It's here locally. It's Donnie's in town.
I heard that. I'm jealous. I am.
And so I will be bringing. That's a great point. And how do we get a seat at the table? And so my challenge as a non-techie, you guys are the techies. You know, I'm GM. I'm Ford. I'm Chrysler. Prove to me that you're more professional than what the stereotype is. And that is that you people don't even know how to shred. You have your garbage with customers' invoices. you throw them in a dumpster in the parking lot. Is that PCI compliant? Is that the professional way of us handling it? And so as a marketer, everything I do is to project to that customer a sense of professionalism. So when we take their invoices, any invoices that this is bringing it really, really down at the end of the show here, is we shred everything in front of that customer so they understand how serious we treat their identity, because their identity is infinitely more valuable than any vehicle that we could ever work on. You can replace the vehicle. How do you put together their identity after it's been compromised? And how in the world do you convince your insurance company that you are trustworthy, and that when you get sued, is there a rider? Do you have a rider for when, not if, you're going to be compromised as a business?
Well, this is, Bill, they're all great points. And this is one of the reasons why I want to step up and get involved in it, because I don't believe we have that we should get involved for the reasons of helping to design something that isn't here yet. And the last thing we want to do is come on the back end. We've all been down that road that, look, you want to make a change. It's incredibly hard to make a change once it's already established. What bothers me is that we know that we have the data issue, right? Well, in an autonomous vehicle, and maybe Tracy, you can add to this, but what information is going to be transferred from that vehicle on a day-to-day, minute-by-minute, second-by-second situation when you've got V2V, V2I, and all this stuff? Secondly, the inspection levels and inspection points. In Delaware, they just went through a new car for 7 years. 7 years. So if they get a bump and the camera goes out, right, on the autonomous vehicle, is that car going to be able to see correctly? You know, put C. You know, if they want to put somebody in that vehicle and they go ahead in a car that isn't accurate, whose fault is it? And I know this could probably be a whole nother episode, but again, what I'm saying is that we're reaching a point that all of us here on this panel, all of the knowledge that we have needs to go to people who have to know what we go through and what is transpiring in our business today so that we can help build it. I really think that our voices at this juncture, and Donnie is that man is amazing of what he's bringing to the table. But I think all of us here have to step up in little ways, tiny ways, to get our voices out there. So that's my big push. And, you know, if it's just myself, but I want everybody out there to get on some kind of panel with the government and put their voices out there. They're going to need us. They really will.
I agree. I agree 100%.
I got to chime in on this. So I totally agree, and I like the whole idea of connected car and the whole idea of connected everything. I want to bring up Fixt. I want to bring up Zuby. I want to bring up Hum. That's a way we can get involved, right? I know that there's been bad press with Fixt because basically they've come and attacked the automotive industry, and they've said, you know, their Facebook commercial is plug it in and it's always a gas cap, right? And they wanted to charge you $200 for a gas cap. But is that not a way to potentially leverage some technology to connect with your customer a little bit better? Because I can't go buy a car that's got all the bells. I can't go buy a 2018 ADOS fully, you know, camera car. So as independent shop owners, I want to bring up the point. Do we even, and this is for Tracy and Greg, I mean, do we even start bringing in these aftermarket devices? Is it beneficial to us? Because at least we start understanding what it means to connect from a shop to a car. And this is the way we can do it right now with our customers.
I think there's a lot on the horizon with the so-called dongles that you can buy on Amazon for, you know, $25. And there's 1,000 apps on the Google Play Store or in the Apple Store that will connect to them and do something. And they all do various things. But I think I've seen two or three now. I wrote them up for a review in a magazine that actually connect to shops and provide the shop a way to send a customer a maintenance reminder. Or if the car throws a code, it'll go to the shop and the shop can say, hey, we saw that your check engine light's on. Why don't you come in? We can check it out. So I think a lot more of that is going to help the aftermarket industry connect through the car to the customer. But again, that's all got to be secure. And the AELDL, or the data link connector, is 30 years old. And a lot of the OEMs are talking about, we need to harden this thing physically and also encrypt it, so not anybody who has $25 and gets online can buy something that'll plug into it and do whatever they want, because that's really the state of where it's at now. They're also talking about developing standards for OEMs and independent shops to be able to actually make a connection on a, you know, a 2021 or a 2022 car that you can't make, you know, that right now anybody can make. So I think the OEMs are headed in that direction, but I think you're right. You need to keep a loud voice of, yeah, we need to be involved with this too, because let's face it, if there's no independent repair shops, the lines at the dealers would be so long, no one would ever get their car fixed. And I know the dealers don't like to admit that, but that was true when fuel injection came out in the mid 80s. And a lot of dealers said, oh, well, we don't need the independent repair shops. Everybody can come here. We'll plug it into our computer, problem solved. But it never worked out, and it's never going to work out. You got to have the independents, and they've got to be have a seat at that table. And they've also got to have some say in what makes sense. I mean, you can't just rely on an OEM $10,000 piece of hardware to plug into a car. There's other alternatives, and they've got to, you know, we've got to keep that going.
Greg, you said about who owns the data, and we're getting to that point. And I couldn't help but think, as I'm sitting here listening to you guys, that the day that the independents get that access, I think there's going to be some requirements on them in order to have it and get it. And I think it goes back to everything we've talked about here. You've got to have this network, this kind of cloud-based thing. You've got to have these levels of protection. I am not surprised that what we're talking about here is going to have an effect on the future if we want to continue to work on high-level diagnostics.
You know what you're talking about, Carm? You're suggesting that the technician becomes essentially Microsoft certified or whatever the platform is, and God help us, the marketer, who's hopefully the CEO at the front of the counter, is going to be able to project the fact that this technician now, who is now Microsoft certified, is going to have to, essentially, we're going to have to double their pay because he, in fact, is worth more than the plumber and then the electrician and the millwright and so forth.
Ollie, did you hear that?
Ollie's looking for a raise right now.
Yeah, I know. I thought he was. Yeah,
Chris, sorry.
Hey, guys. I have to tell you, this is our first episode, Geek 2.0 Part 1. This went places I never expected, and I have to tell you that we're going to have to continue this hard because I think people are going to say, oh, what's next? What's next? We all had like 6 or 7 topics to bring up. We got 2.5 maybe, but you know what? I didn't hold you back. I just wanted you to go, and this was excellent. And if this is any indication of what this episodic series could be, man, you guys have a home run here, and I so appreciate it. Is there any final words from anyone who'd like to chime in? And I don't want to go around the room only because it'll take 25 minutes.
I'm not going to give Ollie a raise.
Ollie, I say you should be getting a double. It should be done. I'm going to talk to Chris about this for you.
I'm going to suggest that we go back, that each of us and everybody who's listening, please look into what the governments are doing, even in your state. Get involved. Ask to be on a board. Put your toe in the water with them. Because if you don't shout your name out there, what you can do, you'll never be heard. And we experience it here all the time. Don't let that happen. We can't afford to let that happen anymore. If the association that you belong to isn't quite able to do it, or they're not, you know, they're not interested, and hopefully they're not, that's not the case, take it upon yourself. We need to all start having our own responsibility and be accountable for our own profession.
Yeah. Contrary to what we hear in mass media, fast food media, global warming isn't the fastest moving element in our universe. It's technology. And technology, if we harness it as marketers, I hate to sound selfish in this, because that's who I am. I'm a marketer. If we can translate that to the consumer base, they'll pay us for whatever we think we deserve, and that's a big thing to say. What we believe we deserve, to make a decent living at this and have incredible people like the people on this panel grow this industry to its next heights.
An eclectic mix of minds here, automotive aftermarket minds. Thank you all so much for being here, guys. We'll do. We'll see you all in Geek 2.0 Part 2.
Thank you, Carm.
Thanks, Carm.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Carm.
Thanks, everybody.
Hi.
All right. Bye. See you, guys.
Hey, thanks, Greg Buckley, CEO Buckley's Personalized Auto Care, Wilmington, Delaware. Chris Cloutier, Golden Rule Auto Care, Dallas, Texas, and CEO of Autotex.me. And Bill Nalu, President of Interstate Auto Care in Madison Heights, Michigan. Also, Karim Morsel, Winkler Automotive, Gaithersburg, Maryland, and Ollie Branch, Network Specialist. Also, Tracy Martin, author and trainer. Nice job, guys. Well done. And I'm looking forward to continue this series. Subscribe to your favorite podcast listening app or sign up for the show's newsletter so you do not miss one new episode release. Find the key talking points, bios, and links to my guests' previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/E339. If you have any questions for the panel, send them to question@remarkableresults.biz, B-I-Z. Hey, thanks for letting the podcast be your think tank. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.